it's not just that immediate benefit of feeling great because you're both sympathetically and parasympathetically activated, all of your tissues are more oxygenated. There's this long-term accumulative effect where your blood pressure is reduced, your heart rate variability, which is your predictor of all-cause mortality, is radically improved within 6 months. You know, Dr. Alan Watkins says that if we breathe like this every day for 20 minutes for 6 months, the reversal of age-related decline in the heart is equivalent to your heart becoming about 10 years younger, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. Wow. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Take a Deep Breath. My name is Mike Mayer. I'm your breathwork coach and host of Breathcast. And today's Breathcast is with author, meditation teacher, and all-round good guy, Tom Granger, who has created this beautiful, beautiful book. I don't know if that's going to show up there, and we'll cut some animation. Tom and I had a wonderful conversation. I really enjoyed speaking to Tom. He is one of, maybe possibly, the most chilled out person I've ever spoke to. So he's doing something right. And I know, don't know about you, I feel like we could all do with a little bit more of just chilling out. So what is this book that Tom's come to talk about? Draw Breath. Essentially, you are able to learn a bit about meditation. And as well as that, you get to follow along with the pencil, which comes with the book, and you get to draw as you breathe in and draw as you breathe out. People like James Nestor has recommended this book. He is the author of Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art, and there's a podcast that I've had with him a couple of times. Not sponsored in any way by this book or Tom. I just think it's a really beautiful gift. And it's something that I really think that is good for you. Or maybe as we're coming up to the holidays now, it's early November 2021 here. And so maybe you're looking for a good Christmas gift. And I said to Tom, I would recommend it because I've had a play with it and I really, really enjoy it. So I hope you enjoy this Breathcast with me and Tom. And we get stuck into all sorts of things. Similar-ish journeys. Although Tom's far more chilled out than I need to have a little bit less coffee and a little bit more meditation with Tom, I think. But he's a really fun, lovely person. And he has a great story. You know, he's studied a lot of different things when it comes to mindfulness and breath work. And I think you'll get a lot of value from this conversation. And if you do want to look at buying Tom's book, I'll put a link down below. I think you can get it on Amazon. And yeah, I think it's going to be a good conversation. So get comfortable, get yourself a cup of tea, and enjoy the next sort of hour of conversation with myself and Tom Granger, author of Draw Breath. Just before we get stuck in, just a couple of messages from me. First of all, thank you so much for being here and being part of the 108,000 people that have clicked that subscribe button on Take a Deep Breath. It's bonkers. You try and picture that many people in a football stadium. I'm not a football person, so I'm not sure how big football stadiums are, but I think there's a lot of people. So big thank you and welcome. And if you're new here, please hit that subscribe button because we've got new content coming out all the time. We've got over 150, 160 different breathing exercises on the channel. And I think this is around episode 35, 36 of the Take a Deep Breath Breathcast, which is bonkers. People often say to me, how are you talking about breath? And I think, I don't even feel like we've scratched the surface here. I feel like there's so much more to talk about. And with each Breathcast, hopefully you feel the same way. You sometimes get 1, 2, 3, 4 nuggets of gold where you think, oh, that's fantastic. We've got some big guests coming up over the next couple of weeks and months as well. So really good opportunity to hit subscribe, hit the bell button, and be notified of all that new stuff, as well as breathing exercises. And for the first time ever, just as a quick an announcement, I've started a new channel. So I'm Mike Mayer, and Take a Deep Breath, I think, is very much around breathing exercises and the Breathcast right now. And so I wanted a place where I could just go and talk about breathing. So just all the questions that you're asking, what's better, mouth or nose? What's the best breathing exercise? You know, when's the best time to do breath work? And 1,000 other things. How do pulse oximeters work? What is breath work? What was the invention of breath work? You know, what does the future of breathing look like? What are the best breathing devices. And they're just the things that are sitting on the top of my head. So I've already got the sort of first 50 to 100 pieces of content ready to go. And that's going to go on the Mike Mayer channel. And it feels like it's a nice place where you just go for that. And there'll be some people that don't really, not necessarily interested in breathing exercises, don't necessarily want to watch an hour's worth of conversation, but really want to know about, you know, what's the top breathing exercise for anxiety. Again, another one, just I'm thinking off the top of my head. So if that sounds like something you're interested in, you're going to be a proper early adopter. I think there's 25 subscribers, including my mum, on there at the minute. So if you're interested in going over there, I will link that here as well. And yeah, I would appreciate that. And if we can get that to 100 subscribers, that would be really, really cool. And that's where I'm going to start putting a lot of attention, because I feel like there's so many questions around breath. And we've covered so much in the breath casts, but sometimes you've got to sift through an hour, you know, to find that one or two things that you're wanting to know. And my goal is to bring that to you really quickly. So yeah, so the Mike Mayer channel. And then last bit from me, my other channel, Binaural Beats Unleashed, over 1,000 subscribers there. That's super cool. So if you're looking for some really cool music, relaxing music, you can just lay back and relax and enjoy meditation, trying to fall asleep, trying to study. That's my favorite one. Trying to write this breathing course at the moment, which many of you have emailed me about. Thank you. But you know, it's just all those different types of frequencies and music. It's completely free. And I'll link that below as well. So I'm pretty busy chap on YouTube at the moment. And so I'm really, really grateful. That's enough yakking from me. Big thanks again to all 108,000 of you. And here is my, I'll call him a friend now, my friend, my mate, Tom Granger. Here we go. Take it away. Cheers. There we go. All right. So we've hit record. Mr. Tom Granger on the podcast, on the Breathcast. It's a pleasure to see you again and talk to you. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm good. And thanks for having me, Mike. I really appreciate it. I think I've listened to hours of your podcast. I think what you're doing is awesome. So it's a real pleasure to be here.
Yeah, well, same. You know, I've found some wonderful guests through your YouTube channel. Just remind us what the channel's name is so people can go and subscribe.
It's Draw Breath. Yeah. So pretty much everything I do is Draw Breath or at Draw Breath.
Yeah. So today we're talking about this little beauty here, your book and you in general. So we'll get stuck into this. Thank you so much for sending this through. It's a beautiful thing. I can't wait to get stuck in, because when it comes to breath work, I had never thought about it in, obviously you read books on breath, but I hadn't ever thought about it. So I'm so looking forward to getting stuck in with you. So just, if you wouldn't mind, Tom, just give our audience a little flavor about kind of who you are and where you've come from. I know that's a big question that I ask, but maybe a little flavor there.
So I am Tom Granger. I teach meditation and breath work. I spent about 10 years as a creative writer and graphic designer for the design industries, for doing advertising, branding, that kind of stuff, mainly focusing on healthcare brands and well-being and nutrition and stuff like that. And now I basically teach people to meditate through drawing. And that's what that book is about, is Draw Breath, which teaches you basic breathwork techniques and basic mindfulness techniques by drawing in time with your breathing. So the book is filled with these pink lines for inhalation and blue lines for exhalation. And they're these sort of flowing images, and they get more and more complicated as you go through the book. And each image teaches you something different about the physiology of breathing, the psychology of breath work, or the philosophy of meditation. So that's my elevator pitch for the book.
That's so cool.
And it's like you say, it's with it being a book, what I wanted to do was make a book that was experiential. So originally it started as a mindfulness meditation book rather than a breathwork book. But as I was working on it, I knew that I needed to include more and more breathwork. But the problem with learning mindfulness from a book is that it's so abstract. And what drawing does is it makes it experiential. So you're getting that immediate feedback from the pencil, that immediate positive feedback that you're doing it right, which is something that people really struggle with when learning meditation. They're so sure that they're not doing it right and they give up. So yeah, that's the background of the book.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And so how did you How did you get involved with meditation and breath work? When did that first start for you? What was that?
My mum is a yoga teacher and psychologist, and I think that I'm only just realizing as an adult like how much effect that has had on me. And my dad's like an entrepreneur, so I think we put those two things together and I was always going to be doing something with something embodied. And yeah, so for me personally, I studied philosophy at university. And I was very sort of disappointed by how analytical Western philosophy is, to the point where I actually think it should come with a health warning because it's so disembodied the way philosophy is taught in Western universities. I'd hoped it would be a lot more sort of spiritual, really, I think, but it's not. And it wasn't until I was in my mid-20s and I was living with a dude who's a massive hippie, and he was reading a book and he was like, I was like, oh, what book are you reading? And he's like, oh, it's this book my mate lent me. And he said that if you read this, you'll never be sad again. And I thought, okay, what is that? You know, I was very skeptical about it, but I was like, can I borrow that? And I read it. And it sounds like a massive cliche because it's so many people's starting point for this, but The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle.
Right. Okay.
And that basically, because it's essentially a philosophy book, but it takes his philosophy of, you know, living in the moment and makes it applied. And so that really piqued my interest. And then it was around about the time that Michael Mosley, I don't know, people from England might know who I'm talking about, he does the Horizon stuff. He's the 5-2 guy, 5-2 diet, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yep. He'd just done a really interesting program about mindfulness, talking about his own sort of struggles with mental health. And he was interviewing people like Vijaymala Birch and Jon Kabat-Zinn in there. And so that was like, oh, right. So I can actually, there's a way I can go and learn to apply this. And so I did a Jon Kabat-Zinn MBSR type course. And it was great, but there's always something missing. There's something missing that I was getting from yoga that I wasn't quite getting from mindfulness meditation. And the missing piece is breath work, really. And in my book and how I teach people mindfulness, I always begin with breath work. So I think it's this huge thing that's missing from the way mindfulness is taught is breath work. So I know that you had Stieg Severinsen on your podcast and he was talking about Jon Kabat-Zinn, the difference between his sort of more measurable biofeedback based breath work and the more sort of talking style of mindfulness and how his style's measurable and mindfulness isn't. And I think that the other thing there is that people get so much more out of mindfulness if they've done breath work first. You know, the most people coming to mindfulness are coming from a place of they've got anxiety, they've got depression, they think that this is somehow a cure, they think this is somehow a relaxation technique. And to a degree, you know, becoming focused on your breathing is going to relax you. But you can get so much more out of it if you've done some really basic breath work first. And I'm not talking like, you know, extreme forms of breath work. I'm talking about literally just breath counting, a few breath holds, things like that. They completely change your focus and your nervous system. And so people coming to mindfulness who do have anxiety, their mind is flying everywhere all the time. And you can get ahead of that with breath work before you begin to teach them mindfulness. So I've gone off on a tangent there, which
Sorry about that. No, that's wonderful. Do you know, with Eckhart Tolle's book, I'm a big audio person. So I'm not a big fan of reading books. I really like to listen to them. But his voice is so calm and so relaxing. I gave up because I just kept falling asleep like every time I try and listen to him. So I think I need to get the written version of that book and give that another crack because
it's quite short. Yeah, you'll get through it in a day or two, really. Okay. Yeah.
Right, I'll add that to my list of books to go and get. Okay, so your mum's into yoga, your dad's an entrepreneur. So have you been this calm always, or have you found, because I just find your voice so relaxing and so calm. And even like now, my energy levels, not have come down, but my calmness has gone up just talking to you and listening to your voice.
So that's good to know.
So it's coming through the internet and through the screen and here we are. Did you find that in your younger years you struggled with anything, or is it, and this has helped? Would you find that you've just been one of those people that's always just had that kind of calmness to them?
Well, that's a really interesting question because, I've always been very chilled as a person. even as a kid. And it was, again, really interesting learning about breath holding and how much of it is to do with relaxation. It reminded me of this situation when I was a kid in school. And I was definitely the fat kid in school. And so I wasn't taken seriously in any of the sort of sports or anything like that. But I was quite good at swimming. I remember there was this one day when we went swimming with the school and we did like this breath holding competition underwater. And they sort of declared a winner and everything and had moved off. By the time I came up out of the water, there was no one there anymore. I'd held my breath for so long. There must be some mistake. I was kind of annoyed that I hadn't got some kind of award or whatever, but it was really interesting because that's so associated with being able to relax into a breath hold. And yeah, as a kid, I've always been very, very calm, but it's interesting as an adult, in my sort of mid-20s, I did struggle quite a lot with social anxiety. But you wouldn't have known because I'm so calm. And also I had sort of two sort of quite strong bouts of depression in my very early 20s. And then again, in my mid-20s. And that can be too much parasympathetic activation. So it's almost like this chicken and egg with that kind of thing of never quite sure whether it's good to be this calm. So I have to find ways of energizing myself, which is the opposite of why a lot of people come to breath work. A lot of people are looking to calm themselves down. I think you know already that my sort of obsession in breath work is coherent breathing. And that's basically, I don't want to get too evangelical about it, but whichever way you are in the spectrum of too calm to too chilled, coherent breathing is going to sort you out because it balances your nervous system by taking equal in and out breaths.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a wonderful, that's something that only came to me really this year. And so it's a fascinating breath work. So that's your main modality. That's your go-to in your toolkit.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I'll at the beginning of any session, I'll be guiding people through maybe some breath counting and moving with the breath and stuff like that. But I mean, you may know I know you've spoken to Dr. Richard Brown on this podcast before. Amazing dude, huge inspiration to me, him and his wife, Tricia Gerbach. And if you read my book, you'll notice that a lot of the good stuff is stolen from their book, The Healing Power of Breath. Because it had such a massive impact on me. That was the missing piece really for me between why some people find mindfulness so difficult and some people don't, and how I could get the best out of my mindfulness. It's like, if you balance the nervous system before trying any kind of meditation, whether it's mindfulness, setting an intention, mantra, whatever it might be, visualization, if you've balanced your nervous system, then you're going to have a much better experience in your meditation. And the philosophy behind what they're doing essentially is, and it's based in Stephen Elliott, his coherent breathing technique, and another guy called Luciano Bernardi, who's a cardiologist and researcher. And they basically, and it's really easy to explain intuitively. So you and I know that every emotion has a breath state associated with it. And if I go, that's kind of shock. And if I go, that's kind of a relaxation or giving up, depending on how you're sighing. And that's because when you're in some sort of state of shock, you need that sympathetic activation. You need to either freeze or you need to either sort of get all that energy or stay very still. So that requires tension. And if you're calming, you're breathing out. And that's basically the nervous system using the breath to stimulate itself. So sympathetic activation is the in-breath, parasympathetic activation is the out-breath. And when you begin to balance those two things, you not only are you stimulating a parasympathetic response, which is what gets talked about a lot, you're also stimulating a sympathetic response. So you end up in this state that is basically focused and alert and calm and relaxed. Ooh. So yeah, because they're not quite binary, sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. People talk about them as though they are, but they're not really. And so you can be highly sympathetic and parasympathetically relaxed, activated, sorry. And that, it just feels good, to be honest. Like it's its own reward getting into that state. From there you can really begin to deepen your meditation, whatever it is that you're doing. So I recommend doing at least sort of 10 minutes of that. I do it for 20 minutes a day. And I've been doing it for about 20 minutes a day since I went and met Pat and Richard and did it with them for a week in London a couple of years ago. And since then, I've been on this journey to really try and uncover everything I can about it. So I've spoken to Dr. Alan Watkins, who's done like a really, a TED Talk that's been watched loads and loads of times. I've spoken to Roland McCrady, who's a lead researcher at HeartMath. Stephen Elliott, who sort of defined the technique about 15 years ago, probably longer actually, nearly 18 years ago. And they've all got a different idea about what it does and why it works. And they're all in their own little camps, which is very interesting, but they're all kind of talking about different parts. So there's nothing that they're saying that doesn't really match each other. They've just got their own idea about why it's so important. So for Stephen Elliott, it's all about the circulatory system. So using the lungs as this thoracic pump, where it's almost equivalent, if what he says is right, about how much blood is actually drawn into the lungs as we breathe in. And as we breathe out, it's ejected from the lungs. And you can measure that on your earlobe in terms of the blood pressure wave with the out-breath. That's fact. So yeah. It's very interesting to think that if most of us aren't really breathing very much, or we're holding our breath most of the time because of dysfunctional breathing, which I know I definitely do, that's my dysfunction, is to hold, then we are definitely changing the circulatory system quite dramatically. He says that we're basically doubling the speed of our circulation, which sort of makes sense with the maths of if you're inhaling a wine bottle of blood into your lungs and then ejecting it, that's just slightly less than the amount of blood that would be pumped by your heart anyway. And so he thinks a lot of the benefits of this are from that wave of blood cascading through the body, through the brain, cleansing, oxygenating all the tissues more effectively, all that kind of stuff. And Gerberg and Brown have got their own sort of theory of what's going on in the brain, which I think you have to be a neuroscientist like them to fully understand, because I don't fully understand it. It's to do with GABA. But really, it's about that equalization of the nervous system. Mm. And then the HeartMath people, they're a lot more kind of thinking it's to do with the entrainment of your heart being this huge electromagnetic pump. And what happens with entrainment is if you leave a load of grandfather clocks in the same room, you come back in a week, they'll all be in time with each other. The pendulums entrain each other. And so their theory is that the heart, being this huge pump that's generating this electromagnetic wave around the body, entrains the brain waves in the brain. I could talk about this all day.
It's so interesting.
It's not just that immediate benefit of feeling great because you're both sympathetically and parasympathetically activated. All of your tissues are more oxygenated. There's this long-term accumulative effect where your blood pressure is reduced, your heart rate variability, which is your predictor of all-cause mortality, is radically improved within 6 months. You know, Dr. Alan Watkins says that if we breathe like this every day for 20 minutes for 6 months, the reversal of age-related decline in the heart is equivalent to your heart becoming about 10 years younger, which is crazy.
Yeah. I love that. Wow. So more like actionable steps. So before I put my Headspace app on or whatever, you know, I'm about to meditate, what are you saying we should do then? We should do 10 minutes of coherent breathing?
A really interesting example, because Headspace have actually begun doing breath counting at the beginning of their apps. I don't know if you've noticed that. They didn't really do that before on mindfulness apps. And I think it's because the mindfulness community are realizing now how important or how effective it is to begin regulating your nervous system before trying to engage in mindfulness. And so the Headspace app is one that already is beginning to go breathe in, 2, 3, 4, out. 2, 3, 4. And for me, I think that, if you have only got 10 minutes to do something, do coherent breathing. And if you're somebody who naturally breathes quite rapidly, I'd recommend doing box breathing first to slow down your breathing rhythm, before you begin to do coherent breathing. And if you want to do coherent breathing, the best way of doing it, in my opinion, is with music. So that's how Stephen Elliott originally started teaching people. He has like a vocal instructive sequence, but also he uses these bells that chime. I don't want to shamelessly plug too much, but me and my brother have actually been working on some music that's going to be available by the end of the year on an app that we're calling Equals Breath. It's going to be very, very affordable. It's going to be free for the first year because we're doing it for the love, really, rather than trying to make money out of it or anything like that. And that's really because people can get bored of doing the same track every day. And there's a kind of community growing, I think, of people making music for this purpose, where you breathe in on a high note and out on a low note. My brother's the real musician here, so he's made some amazing stuff, which I'm going to leave previews on my YouTube site for that. But yeah, I think that doing that before your meditation practice, it's the way I pitch it to people is that if you've got 20 minutes, you're better off doing 10 minutes of coherent breathing and 10 minutes of breath awareness, mindfulness meditation than doing 30 minutes of mindfulness meditation, especially if you're a beginner.
Yeah. Okay.
And what happens is the original people who are studying this coherence style of breathing were studying Buddhist monks and how they breathed while they were meditating. And the monks didn't necessarily say, oh, what we're doing is we're breathing in for 6 seconds, out for 6 seconds. They just breathed like that. And these were monks who'd been practicing for about, 30, 40 years. And the researchers then thought, okay, what if we breathe like that? What happens to the brain? And they were beginning to notice that it was having much of the same patterns, same sort of wave activity that was happening in the monk's mind. So you end up in a meditative mind state anyway, just through your breathing.
Yeah.
So it's really, really cool.
Very cool. So it would be, so you would suggest, so if I was to wake up tomorrow morning, which hopefully I will, start off with a bit of box breathing. How long? 5 minutes, 2 minutes of box breathing?
I think you can get away with 2 minutes. If you want to do 5 minutes, then go for it.
Yeah. And of what sort of count, like 5 seconds of each section?
I think the way I teach people this is don't worry too much about the count, especially if you're not doing it with an app or something to help you. Begin going off your own body's biofeedback, your own sensory feedback. And when I'm teaching people any kind of breath work, I'll always say, this is the science behind this. This is what we're expecting to happen. Your body, it might not feel like that because some people, you do something that's supposed to relax them and it doesn't. Just being aware of the breath, having to change the breath stresses them out. So I don't tell people to necessarily go with a clock. I think you definitely can do if you're just beginning with this. But I always think that just go for beats rather than seconds. So go for in for 4 beats, out for 4 beats, and slow down the beats. Sorry, in for 4 beats, hold for 4 beats, and slow down the beats if you can. Having said that, the timers that I've made, animated timers, I'm doing it for 4 seconds in, hold for 4 seconds. And again, body shape, body size is going to affect that. If you're a tiny person, then you're going to need to do it slightly faster. If you're very tall, if you're over 6 foot, you're going to need to do it probably a lot slower to change it. And again, the main purpose of box breathing in this scenario that we're talking about is to begin slowing down the breath for coherent breathing. So anything longer than 3 seconds for each section is going to do the trick.
Okay, so that's wonderful. So a bit of box breathing, you can do it intuitively. And that's just if people, obviously, I assume most people know, but the in, the pause, the out, the pause, and you just repeat that. So do that for a couple of minutes, slow everything down. And then once you're feeling a bit slower, your breathing's a bit more reduced, then transition over to some coherent breathing and do that for about 10 minutes. So about 12 minutes in. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can do it for 10 minutes, do it for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
If you want the real long-term benefits. So, if you're doing it as a sort of warm-up to mindfulness, then 10 minutes is fine. If you want the real benefits of coherent breathing, those sort of additive long-term benefits, then you need to be doing it for around 15 minutes a day. I recommend doing it for 20 minutes. It sounds quite boring right? To be just sat there breathing in and out repeatedly. But what happens is, because of what happens to your parasympathetic nervous system, because of what happens to the vagus nerves, how they begin to light up, your body really, the interoceptive capability of your nervous system begins to really, really open up as you breathe this way. And you may have had it yourself if you've been meditating even just for 5 minutes, and then you begin to notice your heartbeat like sounds really loud and strong. And that isn't that your heartbeat is getting any faster or harder. Those sensations are always there. It's just that we're unaware of them because our parasympathetic nervous system isn't awake most of the time, in terms of we're not conscious of those sensations. And so once we begin breathing very, very calmly, very slowly, very rhythmically, and we begin to switch on the vagal pathways, all of this interoceptive information in the body begins to light up. And that immediately makes your body better at maintaining homeostasis. So that's the health benefit. But in terms of the benefit to your meditation, mindfulness, like half of the challenge of mindfulness is becoming embodied, being aware of the sensations of the body. You know, pretty much the definition of mindfulness is to be present. And by being aware of the sensations of the body, we are by definition present.
Yeah. Okay.
Because we can't be aware of sensations from 10 minutes ago. They're memories. And so when we breathe like that, when we activate the vagus nerve in particular, because it's connecting all of our vital organs, when we activate those channels of perception and we have so much more interoceptive ability, our body can see into itself a lot more. Mm-hmm. There's much more information for us to be mindful of. So it makes our challenge of being embodied in our mindfulness meditation much more easy.
Yeah. I love it. You're inspiring me to go and do some meditation after this. So we do the coherent breathing, because I would say that you're already meditating at that point, but you're saying actually there's even more benefit. So you do coherent breathing during that time, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong here, you're focusing more on the breath, and if thoughts are coming in, you're kind of just going back to the breath during that, that period. And then you'd go into some sort of meditation practice after, potentially. What would that meditation practice be after you've done the box breathing and the coherent breathing? What would you personally maybe go to next after that?
So what I do normally is mindfulness meditation. Dick Brown recommends is going into open focus meditation. That's because he's a neuroscientist, and there's sort of measurable impact on the alpha waves in the brain when you start doing open focus meditation, which is basically becoming aware of space inside the body, around the body, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And so if you want an evidence base, you know, the BBM method, the Dr. Richard Brown coherent breathing method, him and his wife, Patricia Gerberg, have created this method that combines coherent breathing. Well, it combines a lot of Qigong elements at the beginning, actually moving with the breath, then going into coherent breathing, then doing open focus meditation. And there's a huge, not huge evidence base, but there's this growing evidence base now that that's good for all sorts of things, not just HRV, but it can help PTSD and all that kind of stuff. So I would say go with whatever meditation you're hoping to get the best out of.
Yeah.
Increasingly, I'm interested in visualization techniques. I think that they're kind of, because we've got this obsession with biofeedback, because of the quantified self movement, we're knowing so much more now about what breath work is doing. You know, you can put a pulse oximeter on and immediately begin to see the effects of breath holding and all that kind of thing. Or you can have an HRV clip on your ear that's showing you your heart rate. All these things are amazing because they're measurable. But it's important not to forget these parts of meditation that aren't measurable, the things that are the most difficult to measure, because things like visualization, you don't know if I'm doing it or not. I don't know if you're doing it or not. Scientists definitely don't know. It's very difficult for them to measure that. So I've got this increasing interest in it. And I think it's really interesting that all of the sort of ancient breathwork modalities, things like yoga, things like Qigong, all have a visualization element. And visualization becomes so much easier when you're combining it with the breath. So if you're imagining energy moving around the body as you're breathing, it's so much easier because you actually have the sensations of the breath to latch onto. And I really wonder if this is the kind of chicken and egg, which came first. Were they visualizing and then they realized how good the breath was, or were they breathing and then realized how how much easier it was when you visualize with it. So I think that that's something that's really important to remember. For if you're looking for new meditations, then try visualizations, because they're so interesting. I think that if you do your coherent breathing and you visualize energy moving around your body while you're doing it, which is what Dr. Brown recommends. I know you've done a video with him. I've not watched it yet, but I imagine he probably did something like that with you.
Yeah.
And I've tried doing breathing with and without visualization. And the coherent breathing is a completely different experience when you visualize. Your whole body feels completely different after doing it. So yeah, do whatever meditation you are working on at the moment.
Okay. I had a really powerful experience with visualization. So I was at a Tony Robbins event about 3 years ago. And for those that don't know, Tony Robbins is one of the biggest kind of personal development coaches on the planet, if not the biggest. And ironically, he gets his breath training from Dan Brulé. So so if you don't know who Dan Brulé is as well, it's worth just Googling Dan Brulé or go on YouTube. I think we've both got conversations with Dan.
Yeah.
Dan's a wonderful kind of godfather of breath work. So Tony Robbins has this process called the Dickens. I don't know if you're familiar with it, Tom. Have you come across that?
No, I'm not.
So it's this, I think it's about 2 hours long. It might be hour and a half, 2 hours long. And what he does is he's trying to get you to this place where you're probably 2 or 3 days into the seminar by this point, and you're kind of thinking about all the limiting beliefs that you've got and where you're trying to get to, but what's holding you back. And then you finally get to this visualization exercise, which in itself is him guiding you through. If you don't make the changes that you want to make and carry on the way that you're going, and by the way, I'm butchering this, but you see all the things that might go wrong in your life. So you're there and you're surrounded by people, and people start to cry around you. It's like, imagine if you don't change and you carry on down this route, where are you 5 years from now? And people are really crying. And then he says, well, and then again, I'm butchering it. There's discussion about light coming over you. And if you do make some of those changes, what could that do? And it was so powerful that was the Sunday. On the Monday or the Tuesday, I booked a meeting with my boss. And that week I handed my notice in of my corporate job of 15 years, because one of the things that I'd want to do was go traveling, and I'd put that off in my early 20s. And you know, it's like, oh, you know, I need to have a good job and all those sort of things. But this visualization process did something so powerful inside of me. It's like, I have to make a change right now. And so I often credit Tony Robbins for helping me to kind of make that break in my life and take that chance and go traveling. So I absolutely need to get more stuck into visualization stuff, because whatever it did, it got in so deep as a meditation, as a guided meditation, it made such a change. My entire life was shifted from that point on. It just took me down a different route. So it really, really incredible. If people wanted to know more about different visualization meditations, is there somewhere, is it yourself, is there somewhere they can go to kind of get some of that?
Not really. I would recommend just diving into YouTube. I mean, there's you can go into schools of Kundalini, Qigong, that kind of stuff. That's probably where to start. But now, because of YouTube, there's people out there who no one's heard of who are doing amazing things, leading visualization meditations. But your experience sounds really interesting, because it sounds like you were being asked to visualize the negative potential, which most of us are doing all the time anyway, through just rumination. And so what it sounds like you're doing is becoming more conscious of these things that were probably swimming around your head anyway, of what would go wrong, the fear of not ever achieving, going traveling or whatever it might have been, probably swimming around your head anyway, but maybe not that conscious, not conscious of the effect it was having on you, all that kind of stuff. And that's really where mindfulness can be useful, because it can make you more conscious of these things. You can be having a thought that feels really familiar, but when you actually notice that you're having it, it's like, crap, I've been thinking that for weeks. And I need to be, once you become conscious of it, because your mindfulness is about, you know, becoming aware of your breath, becoming aware of your body, from that place, having a different perspective on thoughts.
So somebody myself that's as Anders Olsen says, is in turbo mode all the time. And meditation is something that I really struggle with. So I really enjoy breath work and doing breathing exercises. But when it comes to meditation, I've tried and failed so many times, even to the point where I'm on the Headspace app and I start to get a bit anxious that, has the app crashed because he hasn't spoken for ages and I need to check the screen and then I'll check and it hasn't crashed. And so it's only been a couple of minutes. I'd love to get your thoughts on some advice there, because I find that there's so many thoughts and stuff. Is there an adaptation phase where you just need to let your head go crazy for the first couple of weeks or months? I don't know. Do you give yourself some permission just to, because you know, when you, like you've just said then about kind of the Tony Robbins visualization, being conscious about it and those thoughts are swimming around, but you tend to just push them to one side. Like, yeah, I don't want to think about that right now. Mm-hmm. So is there some sort of adaptation period where people that are go, 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 they just need to sit down and be quiet for a bit and let things just come through? Or is it more about trying to find the quiet space? It'd be good to get your thoughts on some of that.
They've got this amazing book you should read called Draw Breath. That's really what I was saying about the use of breath work prior to any meditation. Calming the body calms the mind. And in my book, that's kind of what I'm talking about. And the first section is all about body. Second section is all about mind. Third section is all about spirit. And the first section is really about how the body is changing the mind all the time. Second section is all about how the mind is changing the body all the time. So, you know, through things like Tony Robbins probably talks about power posing and things like that, how you're changing your body is having a deep impact. I tell you what, the example that I often use in my courses, because it's relating to drawing, is I ask people to put a pencil in their mouths and just holding the pencil behind their second or third molars.
Yeah.
And while they're doing that, then I ask them I just tell them the story of why they're doing it, which is in 1989, there was this study that they did where they got group of study participants to watch cartoons, and 50% of them had pencils in their mouths while they were watching the cartoons and the other 50% didn't. And they got them to rate the cartoons on how funny they were.
Mm-hmm.
And you can probably guess who thought the cartoons were funnier. Mm. It was the people with the pencils in their mouths. And then you take the pencil out of your mouth, you realize that your cheeks are actually beginning to hurt because you're using those muscles, because it's uncomfortable in the corners of your mouth to have a pencil there. You're using the muscles of your cheeks to kind of pull your lips back, and you're actually unconsciously smiling.
Right.
And you're not necessarily aware that you're smiling, but your brain is receiving a signal that you're smiling.
Mm.
And those cartoons become funnier as a result for the people who had the pencil in the mouth.
Wow.
And so that's a really simple example of how changing the body changes the mind. Just having that pencil in your mouth literally makes the world seem funnier. So you're changing not just your body, but your perception of things as well.
Yeah.
Ultimate advice, and probably what my mum being a yoga teacher would say, is that's just yoga. So yoga is all about, you know, the eight limbs of yoga. The pranayama and the asana come before any kind of meditation. They're the four later limbs, or the things to do with perception and consciousness and awareness, because you need to have mastered your body, mastered your breath before you can begin to focus for those long periods of time.
Yeah.
And not to plug my book too much, but the reason I feel that it's so useful is because when you're drawing in time with your breathing, it's instantly relaxing, because the pencil, the nib of the pencil, is like this needle moving through the present moment. You can't sort of forget halfway through about the fact that you're supposed to be concentrating on your breathing, because you're doing this. And to answer your question, is there a moment right when meditation becomes easy? I think even advanced meditators are going to have a difficult time meditating if there's something genuinely stressful going on in their lives. But when what clicked for me with mindfulness meditation, eventually after many years of struggling, was that it actually can be intrinsically rewarding. And now I don't use any kind of guide for my meditations. I'll just sit there and become aware of my breath. And really, it's about a lot of the definitions of mindfulness. We use the word curiosity, and curiosity isn't something that you really do because it's a chore. Curiosity is something playful. It's something that we do because it's intrinsically rewarding. And once your breath awareness, once you can be curious about the sensations of your body in the same way you might view a piece of art in a gallery, rather than trying to feel them more deeply, just having this feeling of exploration and curiosity around the feelings of your body changes the whole dynamic of trying to meditate. It's no longer trying, it's the sensations themselves drawing you in.
Yeah.
So once, you know, meditation becomes its own reward, it's much, much easier.
Mm.
And the last thing I'll say on that whole, you know, I can't meditate, which is what so many people say to me. There's this myth that mindfulness meditation is about not thinking, and it's not that at all. If you're aware of your thoughts while you're happening, it's almost like having a step back from the thoughts, allowing the thoughts to come and go. That's when mindfulness becomes really powerful. But so many people have the wrong idea about it, and not to diss apps, but it's quite an unstructured learning environment most of the time. People are dipping in, just picking a meditation, that kind of thing. The first thing I'll tell people, I guide them through a game, a drawing game, where we make three columns on a piece of paper and then draw dots in each column. And then you start at the bottom, and the game is that your aim is to focus on the sensations of your breathing in your nose. So cold air coming in, warm air going out. And inevitably, you will become distracted by some kind of thought. Mm. And the columns represent past, present, and future. So you start in the present. You will be distracted by thought. You recognize, is it a thought about the past or is it a thought about the future?
Yeah.
And you move your pencil into the column, join it to the dot, whether it's in the past or the future, and then back into the middle, start again on the breath. And we just sit there for about 10 minutes and do that. And by the end, they've got this complete jumble of lines of going up and into the present, into the future, into the past. And it's really to demonstrate that you can't control the mind.
Mm.
The mind is an experience like the breath. It's something that's most of the time just happening for us and to us. That your thoughts aren't something that most of the time you're doing. There's something that's just happening. And once we begin listening to thoughts, that's when they lose any kind of negative power over us, because they become a choice at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the idea behind mindfulness meditation. It's not about not thinking. It's mm-hmm. about noticing and not becoming attached to your thoughts, even though they're in your voice.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had a few moments of that in my life. Sauna really helps me with that. So I always used to like to reference it jokingly as the you know, my church or the church of sauna, especially when I've got some time to myself, which obviously was more pre-COVID, I guess, times. So, and just being able to sit there quietly, and obviously you're going through a bit of add stress as well, because obviously it's hot. And there's been a few times I can remember so clearly where I was able to just get those thoughts just a little bit further away and watch them come and go. So it's something which, intuitively and deep down, personally, I know I need to get a lot closer to this introspective side, because everything's very exerted at the moment. Was that the right word? Looking at externally at stuff. So it's this, it keeps coming back. So let's go into this then, because I think you've sent me a real gift here. So it came a couple of days ago. When's the best time for me to start with this? Is it a morning read? Is it a bedtime read? I know it might be different for different people, but how should I consume this? What would be a good way of getting started?
I think start whenever you've got time. Think of it more as something you're going to sit and enjoy rather than learn from.
Okay.
And you know, I think a lot of us, I've got a stack of books on my shelf, like waiting to be read, right? Because they're kind of like, you know, I really want to read Patrick McEwan's new book, The mm-hmm. Breathing Cure.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm like, no, I really need to make time for that. And then I need to make notes and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Really, this is a book you can just dip in and out of. I recommend doing it starting from the beginning of the book. Mm-hmm. So each illustration builds. Mm-hmm. And also there's a kind of a slightly learning curve where you want to learn to draw in time with your breath rather than breathing in time with your drawing. Otherwise you end up going... you know, but it's kind of, it really is a book that's there to be enjoyed, like a coloring book, but with more sort of meat on the bone, because there's a lot more sort of fact in there, and it's actually giving you tips on how to meditate, kinds of breath work you can enjoy, all that kind of stuff. Interestingly, I did it's my first book as a health book. I used to write humor books. So I did a book called The Colouring Book for Goths, the world's most depressing book, which is a book that's a colouring, do you remember the colouring book craze about 6 years ago?
Yeah.
And this was like a kind of a pastiche of that. It was like a book that you're designed, you're supposed to colour entirely in black to achieve a demeanour of aloof cynicism. So all of the books that I did in the past were all interactive. And this is the first sort of serious one. I'd been writing about mindfulness since I really got into it in my sort of mid-20s, became like really evangelical about mindfulness meditation. And I'd been writing about it and writing poetry and wordplay around it, because so much of mindfulness has this, like, you know, we're aware of our awareness, we're thinking about thoughts. There's a lot of room to play with the language around it. So I'd had all this wordplay and language around it written down already. And the idea for Draw Breath actually came, it sounds like a made up marketing story, which is why I rarely talk about it. But when, similar to you, you know, I'd spent my 20s career based. And at the end of my 20s, I wanted to go traveling. I was really disconnected from my, it sounds a bit diva-ish, but from my creative self. Like, I'd been designing logos, designing art for other people for so long, but I'd really lost my own connection to it. And so I took a sketchbook with me and went traveling. And it was when I was in Dharamsala in North India, which is sort of the foothills of the Himalayas, where all the Tibetan monks who've been exiled from Tibet live. And I was doing lots of meditation sessions while I was there. You could go and the monks will lead stuff. It's a really cool place. And I was trying to reconnect to my drawing. I love drawing nature and I love drawing people. And so I was drawing the mountains around me. And I began drawing in time with my breathing, because I'd been to a meditation session that morning. And I was like, oh man, this is really relaxing. Yeah. And then it took me a while to develop the idea into the sort of colors and the tracing element of it. But yeah, so that idea came from the magic of Dharamsala in India. But I thought, gosh, I've come up with this idea. This is brilliant. Of course, actually loads of people have come up with this idea before. So there's something in Zen calligraphy called the Enzo circle, which is like a black circle like that. You'll see it on the logo for lots of meditation apps. And
it's like a paintbrush, is it?
It's like a black paintbrush of a circle. That's the Enzo circle. Right. And if you watch a monk drawing one of those circles, they sort of sit there with a loaded brush and they wait for the natural inclination to draw. So they're trying to observe themselves in the spontaneous act of drawing the circle. Mm. And they might sit there for like 10, 20 minutes before they actually just draw it. And they do that in time with their exhalation. So it's this sort of symbol of, well, it represents many different things symbolically. But for each monk, it's this symbol of the single breath, and it represents the sort of whole of the universe, or the inside or the outside. It's got loads of different symbolic meaning. And that's because in Zen arts, there's this huge focus on representing the spontaneity of nature. So you've probably seen those like Japanese paintings that are really long, and they're usually in black and they have like a red stamp somewhere on it. And they look incredibly detailed. And normally painting nature, there'll be like a landscape or hills or mountains and trees. But when you get really close to those, you realize it's actually only a few brush strokes, just masterfully done to look like really detailed nature. So they're using the organic nature of the brush to represent the organic nature of nature in maximum detail. And there's this, with the Enzo circle and with a lot of their techniques, they're trying to honor the artist as a part of nature. So that's why they're aiming to be spontaneous in their own act. It's about not trying to control, about allowing the painting to just come out spontaneously. So they're recognizing that they're actually a part of this pattern, this spontaneous pattern that we call nature.
Yeah.
And so it's just so interesting to me that it's about the breath, because there's this ability to yield to the breath and allow ourselves just to be natural and to stop trying. And so that's where what we might call breath work differs from mindfulness meditation. Mindfulness is about observing the nature within yourself. So we're all desperate to get out into nature because we're in lockdown. But we can get into nature because the patterns of sensation in your own body are reflections of nature. All the pulsing, vibration, the wind of the breath, all of this stuff is recognition that you are part of nature. You don't have to try just for a few moments while you're meditating. You can just be. So I love that intersection of art and mindfulness and meditation. And there's a lot of other ways that art is reflective of meditation. So if mindfulness is about if mindfulness is about just observing ourselves non-judgmentally, when people are beginning to learn to draw, often what they'll draw is the symbol of the thing that they're drawing. So if I asked you to draw, I don't know if you're good at drawing, let's pick somebody else. But if I asked someone off the street to draw and they, A, don't have much confidence in drawing, B, just haven't had any practice for years, they'll probably, if I ask them to draw a cat, right, they're going to begin by drawing, I don't know, there's an eye there, there's an eye there. Cats have this little button nose. They've got sort of spiky ears. And what they're drawing is the symbol of a cat. They're breaking it down into the micro symbols, but really they're drawing what their mind is perceiving instead of what their eye is seeing. And so much of what meditation is about recognizing the symbols that we're placing in front of reality. And once we can let go of those, we actually begin to feel and be in the moment a lot more. And so when you're teaching people to draw, the main hacks that you give them are ways of not seeing the symbol anymore. So by turning what you're drawing upside down, you no longer see the symbol. It's much easier just to copy the lines, or by breaking it into a grid and just drawing one square at a time in the grid. Again, you're not seeing the whole symbol. So you're not trying to project your symbol back onto what you're drawing. And the other way that art's really useful tool for learning meditation is that it's a very safe space in which to practice recognizing the inner critic. So we all have that inner critic. And when I'm leading art workshops and I give people the option to talk about what they've done and things like that, but they'll always go, oh, well, I've done this and it's not very good. And, you know, I don't, and that inner critic's coming out there, but it was there the whole time they were drawing as well. So if you can guide people in a bit of meditation first, get them to begin recognizing what's happening in the mind, then tell them to expect the inner critic and they can notice it while they're drawing. Because I've already told them, your inner critic might say something like this. And it's basically the same for all of us. Oh, yeah. God, what if I have to show this to somebody? Am I doing this right? All those thoughts are going to come up for everyone all the time. Because we all feel kind of isolated by those thoughts, but actually everyone's having them. And so art is a great safe space you can create for people to practice noticing that inner critic and not attaching themselves to it.
That's interesting. So if I wanted to get started with some basic art, because I'm, you know, I can do a really good 3D box. You know, I've nailed that 3D box. and my stick men are pretty good now. Yeah. What is it, just getting some paper and some pens and just being, you know, by yourself, just doodling? Is that a good way to get started?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, in my own art, I rarely finish a project. Like I'll start about 100 projects a year. Draw Breath's just like a miracle that I finished it, really. I think just have a sketchbook, just be doodling. No one has to see your work. That's already, you know, getting away from any kind of hypercritical state. It's really about knowing what you enjoy drawing. So for me, that is faces. I love drawing people, in poses. It helps me learn more about yoga as I'm learning more about anatomy while I draw. I love drawing nature as well. It's an excuse to be out in nature. If you want to learn to draw, there's a section at the back of Draw Breath, which teaches people to use the meditation skills that they've been learning and apply them to learning to draw. So that's sort of the last sort of 20 pages of Draw Breath. It's all about these hacks for learning to see past symbols and see the reality that's actually there underneath. Because the way that relates to our daily life is, we might say something, right? Like, oh, last week was terrible. And that symbol, those words are all just symbols, okay? We're placing them in the way of our memory of last week. We're just remembering a kind of simplified version of it because we just attach ourselves to these symbols instead of the actual sensations of last week. You know, well, actually, I got a really good night's sleep on Wednesday, and then I had a lie-in because I don't have to get to work on all those things that we just forget because they're not part of the narrative.
Right.
And once we recognize thoughts, we recognize the narrative. Once we see the narrative that we're applying over our lives, we can begin to make a choice about how seriously we want to take it, ignore it completely if we want to, and be with what the real sensations of what's happening right now.
That sounds so good. My last question for you is, well, no, I've got a couple more. If you're all right, time. I know we've got a few minutes,
right.
If that's all right. How do you handle, you personally, the tech side of things? So being on constant demand, looking at the news, Netflix with all the great shows that are on there. What does that look like for you? Are you able to create and carve out some space for you? That is, because for me, I feel like we're turbo mode. We're in consumer mode all the time. It's consuming everything all the time. Whereas it feels like with stuff like this, it's the other way around, isn't it? It's you being on your own and absorbing something or doing something, I should say, with a pencil or a pen. So what does that look like for you? How do you create some time for you?
Okay, yeah, that's a really good question. And it's something that I think as tech gets increasingly more entertaining and interesting, we are, and also being trapped in lockdown, we're kind of relying on tech so much to give us the social element, the illusion that we're with other people. I mean, that's what social media is. And I personally, I'm guilty of that, you know, being on Instagram. I know that you've just joined Instagram recently, and when it has to be part of your job, you know, I've actually got most of my gigs through Instagram. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to ignore it. Mm-hmm. So it's really about setting real boundaries. And what I've noticed increasingly recently is when I do sit down and try and choose something to watch on Netflix, there's nothing really that I ever want to watch. And that makes me question, okay, why am I actually sitting down doing this? Is it just to fill space? In which case, why don't I do something else? Because, you know, if you think about winning the lottery, right, what comes up for you? What would you do if you could win the lottery? For most people, definitely myself included, it's sitting on a beach somewhere, right, listening to the waves, enjoying the sun, on your body, maybe sipping an ice cold drink. It's a state of relaxation and actually doing nothing that we want. That's what we want. But we're addicted to this kind of, oh no, I have to do something. I'm still not seeing that film. My friend told me it was really good. I need to watch that. Mm. Oh, I should check my phone. And I spoke to Susan Shaw Femi recently, who's the wife of Dr. Les Femi, who created the open focus technique. And in his book, which was written in 2008, he's talking about the deluge of tech and information that's trapping us in narrow focus.
Yeah.
And when we're in narrow focus, we're activating the sympathetic nervous system. So the more narrowly we're focused, the more sympathetic activation there is. Mm-hmm. So in narrowly focusing ourselves on anything, we're beginning to do the opposite of what we really want, which is to be calm and relaxed. Slightly different with reading because we open up the space in our heads of like what we're imagining. But when we're just being spoon-fed stuff like with TV and social media, then we're getting trapped in narrow focus. And the antidote to that is kind of opening your focus with something like open focus technique or open monitoring meditation. And it's so dangerous. TikTok, I mean, I don't know, somebody sent me something on there the other day, just like one 10-second video.
Yeah.
And I was stuck there for about an hour hypnotized by the amount of stuff. And it's like, no one on TikTok is getting paid to make that content. Mm. It's only, you know, TikTok who win. I've just joined TikTok because again, it's like, do I have to? I just post whatever I've done on Instagram on there. I might do a TikTok that's just like, stop scrolling, breathe. Okay, do you still want to be on TikTok? Like a kind of trap door to get out of there. Because it's just so addictive to be in that narrow focus. What can you do? Well, you can set boundaries. The more mindful you are, the more you'll begin realizing, am I actually enjoying this? Why am I doing this? Mm. Like, I mean, I don't have video games, but I was living with my brother in lockdown last year, and he's got like video game stuff, PS, whatever. And I was having a go on it, and I was just recognizing like how much tension was in my body after I played the video game.
Yeah.
Like my whole arm was like seizing up from like the, oh God, I gotta shoot that guy or whatever. And so I was like, that's me. I just don't need to play video games anymore. That's not a way of relaxing. I know that there are video games that are out there that are designed for mindfulness, like Journey, I think there's one called, and Flower. But the majority of video games are just designed basically to trap your attention.
Yeah, I'll check out Journey. I haven't heard of that one. But yeah, you're right. I'm not a big gamer either, but I'm a big fan of Formula One. And so I've got the Formula One game. And I haven't played it for ages. I managed to find a little bit of time recently. And as I was playing it, my stomach, my gut was sucked in and my breathing was shallow. And I was like, I am stressed right now sitting here playing. And like, that can't be good for you long term. I was all, you know, because you're in the moment and you're going around this track. I know it's all virtual, but you go around this track at 200 miles an hour. And I remember actually years ago, I used to play Call of Duty. I'm talking 10 years ago. I used to play it just before bed sometimes, and I'd go to bed and I wouldn't be able to sleep for like 2 hours. This is like, I don't know, 2008, 2010. So I didn't have the understanding of sympathetic, parasympathetic. I just couldn't understand why I was so jacked up and couldn't sleep. And then I made the connection of, I can't play computer games before bed. So yeah, so there's something very interesting there, but I hadn't actually thought there might be some nice meditation games. I'll have to
they must be pretty good. I think they won lots of awards and stuff like that. But I mean, the thing about that, your attention basically is the product on social media. Facebook, Instagram, whatever it is, you know, you're not paying for those services.
Yes.
Because you are the product. You're the product that they're selling to advertisers is your attention. And in the last sort of 10 years, man, it's just got crazy. I mean, I mentioned that what Dr. Femi said in 2008, that was 13 years ago. I mean, since then, like, Facebook knows what it's doing. If you go on there, within 10 seconds, maybe you'll have been given something that's deliberately there to make you angry. Look at this terrible thing that someone on the political left or right has done, whatever you don't like. It's never good news. It's there to make you angry, because when you are angry and you're emotionally aroused, you act. And that's what they want you to be. They want you to be clicking buttons to get to the next hyper arousal state. So that eventually you click on an ad and buy something. That's the whole model behind Facebook. It's about
nefarious.
And mindfulness is really about getting control of our own attention. Where are we directing it?
There was, I forget who I was listening to now, but it was, somebody that he's Jewish, but he'd gone, a bit deeper into the faith. And so, him and his family had gone back to, you know, when they switch off basically on a Friday night, and they're switched off until a Saturday night, and they don't work, and they, you know, they just go to the temple, and during that kind of 24-hour period, there's no tech. And so it just got me, and he was saying that it's been a really great thing for him and his family to kind of reconnect. And it just got me thinking, ooh, I wonder if I should start trying something like a digital detox Saturday or something like that. Because actually the idea of it sounds so bonkers now. What, you're not going to look at your phone or a TV screen for a day? What's wrong with you? But actually, that's the most natural state. If you say that to somebody now, they'll probably think you're crazy. So I'm just, only a couple of days ago, started playing with the idea of maybe having one day a week, which is completely turned off. And maybe it's a bit of book, it's a bit of drawing, it's a bit of doodling, it's getting into nature, and just having this thing where there's no screen time. Because I don't know about you, I'm a home worker now, and so I spend, and there's many benefits to home working, so, you know, it's not a good or a bad thing, but I spend most of my time with my eyes locked at this screen at this distance. I don't have meetings with any real humans anymore where we're in the room and get to shake hands and, you know, look at something 3D. It's staring at the screen the whole time. And so my screen time has, I don't know, doubled or trebled since lockdown happened, which is terrifying, really. So just playing with this idea now of how can I get more digitally removed and having some time, which comes back to really where we've been talking the whole time, I think, which is, stop being a consumer as much as being somebody that's more introspective and maybe doing something a bit artistic and a bit more back to basics. So
I honestly think that'll be the gap year, you know, of the next 10 years, because I don't know what it was like when you did go traveling in the end, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, I'd been done a little bit of traveling in my very early 20s and then went again sort of the very end of my 20s. And when I was in my early 20s, you'd go traveling and there's all these other travelers and you'd be sharing stories about what just happened, where you should go next, all that kind of stuff. And when I went in my late 20s, I mean, I was old for a traveler. I mean, most of them are like back, you know, out of uni or just before uni or whatever, but they're all just on their phones the whole time. Everyone in the hostels, everyone, and like doing, trying to find the restaurant on whatever that thing's called where you rate
TripAdvisor or something.
Everyone's just doing that. Yeah. It's like the adventure of the unknown has just disappeared.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that not only because of that, but because of the health impact of just being on a screen all day, of the effect on your attention of just having this like micro bites of entertainment. I do think that there'll be this gap year trend of like, ooh, go into yourself, go into not having any tech, just go and live somewhere where there's no tech and actually communicate with other people. I mean, that in itself can be parasympathetically activating, you know. It's why breath work is so much more powerful when you do it in a group.
Yeah. Oh, have you ever heard of an author called Chris Ryan, Dr. Chris Ryan? He's been on Joe Rogan's podcast a few times. He wrote Sex at Dawn. He also wrote And Civilized to Death is more recent book. So on his podcast, Tangentially Speaking, which I highly recommend, it's one of the top podcasts in the world, in my opinion. And I'm a bit biased because I love Chris. He tells stories of when he was in India in the late 80s, early 90s. And you'd send a letter back home to your parents, to your mum. And then you'd say, I'm going to be in this town in like 6 months' time. So then his mum would write a letter back and it would be waiting for him there. And so there was this like completely different level of travel where you don't really know where you're going and you're getting like stories off different people. So we went traveling 2019. And so there's still, you know, there's still some magic to travel. Of course there is, you know, you're around different people, different cultures, different environments, different languages, currencies, different food, all that wonderful stuff, architecture. But I remember I would get to the airport, buy the SIM card, stick it in my phone, get Uber. Uber would then pick me up from the airport. We'd then go from the Uber to the pre-booked hotel, which we'd found, or hostel on hotels.com, get to that hotel, order some Uber Eats food. Whole time not having to take any money out, done everything on your phone, and everything was very, very safe. There was only a couple of times where we couldn't do that, and actually they were the more exciting times because like not really sure where we're going to sleep tonight, or we're not really sure where we're going. So yeah, you're right, there's been some magic taken out, but it's really hard, I think, now that that door's open, to go, I'm not going to take a phone traveling with me. I
honestly think it would be impossible now.
It'd be really hard
traveling I mean, just you couldn't even have a job now without having a smartphone, I don't think, in this country. It's just like completely changed in 10 years.
There was something, though, I don't know if we talked about this off air when we talked last week, but I did the Camino a couple of years ago. Did we talk about that?
No,
have you heard of the Camino?
No.
It's a walk across Spain. There's a film called The Way by Emilio Estevez directed it, and his dad's in it. Martin Sheen's in the film. It's a good film. But essentially, you start in France and you walk across the Pyrenees and you walk all the way till you get to Santiago, which is where there's a big church, and it's a pilgrim's walk, and it's about 500 miles, and you walk every day. And some days, one day I walked 27 miles, so it's absolutely exhausted. So you're walking every day, and you've got your big backpack on. And I did that experience with a phone, with maps, but also with the book that had the hostels in. But I realized quite quickly, you could do this without. And some people were. I remember I met this one guy and we just sat down, and you meet people so easily. And you've got this wonderful question of, why are you walking the Camino? Oh, everyone's got their own story and journey. I've gone through a divorce and all these different things, and people have passed away. So I had kind of I wanted this 30-day period out of life. But this one guy, he sat down with me at the bar and he just stopped for a second. He goes, oh, I haven't heard music for ages. And he goes, it's really powerful now. Because I had my headphones in, I was listening to music every day. And he purposely took a little camera with him, and I think a little non-smartphone. So he took a couple of photographs, but really he'd wanted to disconnect. So this guy really jumped in. And actually, for people watching this, you can still do that. You can go and do that walk across Spain now. And actually, if I was going to do it again, I'd probably just leave my phone off and have it as an emergency. Mm-hmm. So you can really get into it, because it is all about people. Anyway, I'm not sure how we've gone on to this subject, but I guess, digital detox. So there are, you can still create that magic, I think, in life, but it's just a bit harder to do. But I think it's more rewarding if we can kind of take ourselves away, because you're right, safe is boring as well. Safe is good, but safe is a bit boring. And it's harder for that magic to happen, I think, when everything's got a trip advisor rating score next to it. But yeah, so there we go. So pulling that back to breath, Tom, that was good. That was a good little tangent for us. How can people find your book? How can people find you? Where do they need to go next?
So I am at Draw Breath on most things. I am Draw Breath on YouTube. And I have a website, drawbreath.com, where you can download free samples from the book. There's also my learning resources on there if you're interested in watching any of those videos. The book is available on Amazon. It's where it's the cheapest. If you're boycotting Amazon, then you can get it at the Book Depository and I think Barnes & Noble if you're in America. But it's available on Amazon in America as well. It's been translated into a number of languages. I don't know them off the top of my head. Definitely German and Spanish, and it's going into Japanese at the moment. So if you speak any of those languages, then check those versions out as well. But yeah, if you guys are interested in anything that I'm doing, you can drop your email at drawbreath.com, and I send out like a roundup, and I do weekly live sessions as well as longer courses. So yeah, it'd be great to see you. And it's like you were just saying there about everyone's got a story on your walking trail on the El Camino. Everyone's got a story at these breathwork events. That's why I love doing them. Everyone's there for a reason. And I can't wait to be doing live events again. So yeah, I'd love to see anyone who's listening to this and found it interesting. If you want to come, then sign up at drawbreath.com, and I'd love to see you at an event.
Yeah, no, very cool. I will link to all that below, guys, so you can go and click on the link and get the book and go to Tom's website. Tom's YouTube is very cool as well. It's got some wonderful guests on there. So if you've enjoyed this breathcast and you want to go deeper and you want to see some other people, then obviously you can check out what we've got here, but also go to Tom's Draw Breath, hit his subscribe button and check out some of his wonderful content as well. Tom, that was a pleasure, my friend. I look forward to getting stuck into this. And then letting you know how I got on, and I will jump into one of your live sessions, because that would be wonderful as well, I think, to kind of experience some of that.
Awesome, thanks Mike.
Wonderful, guys, thank you so much for watching. Please click our subscribe button if you haven't done so already. We've got over 100 videos dedicated to breath work now, so maybe you want to check out some of that stuff as well, and we will see you on the next breathcast. Cheers, Tom. Cheers. Thanks, everyone,
man. See you soon.
See ya. Thank you for sticking around to the end of that podcast. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Tom. The book is ace. I do recommend it. So if you want to go and have a look at that, the links are down below. It's just a really nice time just to play with a pencil. It's such a new concept to me that you can be breathing and using something, you know, textual, something, you know, in the 3D space to draw. So check that out. If you're stuck through to the end, I really, really appreciate it. You're here right now. So just to close off again, big thank you for being here. I'm really, really grateful for everybody that clicks on and watches these breathcasts. And hopefully you got a couple of takeaways you can implement into your life. As I mentioned at the start of the breathcast, we've got the Mike Mayer channel, where I'm talking to you about different breathwork stuff. What's the best breath work? What's the best time to do breathing? Is it mouth or nose? What's a breathing exercise? And a load of other things that's been percolating in my mind over the last sort of 5 years. What's the benefits of different breathing types? What's the variables of breathing? And I'm just reading them off. They're just here, ready to go, that people are asking me in the comments. So if you want to go over there and subscribe, that would be incredible. The Binaural Beats Unleashed is my other YouTube channel. So again, you might have heard me talk about that at the start of the breathcast. This is the opportunity now to click on that link and subscribe over there, get yourself some free binaural beats, pop those headphones in and get some relaxation, some study, some focus. We've got an MP3 store. So I took the top 10, 15, maybe 10 breathing exercises, converted them into MP3s, put them in this little shop. The link is below, and you can support the breathcast. You can support me. It's a couple of dollars, $5, I think, is the top price for the top breathing exercise. that's yours. You keep it forever. You get on a plane, or you know, you've not got a good signal, you don't want an ad. You can put on box breathing, or you know, a bit of deeper breathing, whatever it is that you're interested in. There. So by all means, get stuck into those. Really appreciate it. And the last thing is Instagram. So we're bordering on 2,000 followers on takeadeepbreath.co.uk. So if you go over there and you've not done so already, I'm putting content on there. Big year coming up next year. We're heading towards the end of 2021 now. Moving into this. Whatever this is, breathe in, breath work, take a deep breath, Mike Mayo, bit more full time. It's quite nervous, quite excited, quite nervous, but looking to make that transition into this full time. So just starting to think about what that looks like. I've talked to somebody about the courses that I'm working on at the moment. So, you know, the question is, can this become something where I can do it full time? Because I love it. I love talking about breathing. It's been nearly 5 years to the day, 1st of December. I did those first breathing exercises with Wim Hof. And so all of that is coming through. I didn't know this was going to be a bit of an emotional share at the end. But yeah, quite excited, quite nervous. And I'll talk more about that, I guess, as time goes on. But anyway, you've done me the wonderful favour of sticking the right way through. So it's a big thank you. And we will see you on the next Breathcast. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Take care. And try this breathing exercise if you've not tried it. So that's the next video for you to click here and do some wonderful, wonderful breathing. Cheers. Thank you. Bye.